relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Job Creators Network.
Do you want the bad news or the good news first? The bad news, you guys know if you pay attention, if you listen to us every single day, they canceled our trip to Israel this year because of the China virus. But it's okay, here's the good news. We've been in touch. We've got it all cleared up with the Israeli government, and we're back. We've got our dates, November 30th, December 9th, next year for the trip of a lifetime. With my colleague, Dinesh D'Souza, we are going to travel to those places you may only have read about in the gospel. Reserve your tickets today for the trip of a lifetime. Just call 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com and reserve your places today. We'll go to the Sea of Galilee. We'll go to the Dead Sea. We'll go to Jerusalem, to the Temple Mount, and we will have a trip that, well, you'll be talking about for years, if not decades. That's 855-565-5519 or go to standwithisraeltour.com. First guest of the day. So excited, man. He's almost as hard to get on the show as President Trump, but we got both of them. He is professor of medicine at Langone Institute at NYU. He is the author of a superlative book called COVID, The Politics of Fear and the Power of Science. Dr. Mark Siegel, welcome back to America First.
Great to be on with you, Sebastian. Did you notice President Biden today up at the podium, maskless on the mic, saying, giving a public health lesson, saying that you only have to wear a mask when you're not speaking, and then when you were spewing and shouting into the microphone, you don't need a mask. That was a very interesting public health lesson, wasn't it?
It was so strange. We played a clip of him at the open of the show, shouting most often, saying, I'm going to stop the virus. And sometimes he had a mask on, sometimes he didn't. We saw him this weekend in Nantucket with his wife without a mask in public. Very strange. Dr. Siegel, who are the science deniers in the current debate over COVID?
Well, I don't know who he's referring to. And one of the reasons that that's so unfortunate is that science itself is an evolving process, a learning process. And the learning actually that went on with the prior administration led to a vaccine in an unprecedented period of time. And that's not been championed, nor did the therapeutics that have come out that President Trump was very, very excited about when I met with him last July. And they're coming out. So, and the testing, which hasn't been adequately sent around the country by the Biden administration. You know, so in other words, we've had a lot of biotechnology. That's science. We're learning about this virus. I don't know who he's referring to. Maybe it's the politicians that stand up there at the podium and give public health pronouncements. Could it be that?
Well, I played a cut, and I have to get your response. We have Dr. Anthony Fauci in his position for 37 years, takes home $413,000 of taxpayer money, who at the weekend said, attacks on him are attacks on science because I am science. He actually said that. Isn't that dangerous when any one individual believes they are science, Dr. Siegel?
Well, sure, especially because that is dangerous because people are wrong, and he's been wrong. He's a very bright guy. He's got a tremendous history, HIV forward, but no, he's not science. And one of the ways that science comes about, and this is really important, is that things that seem to be experimental, and we like to say science is throwing things at the wall. It's not about dogma. It's about learning and experimenting. That's where the word experiment comes from. Everyone would agree that the word experiment fits with science. Well, experiment means you didn't know and then you learn. It's humble. Science is humble.
And the idea that it's based upon consensus as if doctors vote. Doctors don't vote. I thought they test things out and see if they work based upon a hypothesis.
There's no consensus in science. In fact, it's based on debate, and it looks like debate has gone out of the public discourse in this country right now. I mean, you know, you get vilified on social media if you even say you're a conservative. I mean, all of that is deeply disturbing. I like to say, by the way, I'm okay with people that believe in government, but are you talking about the post office? I mean, what government agency are you talking about that actually works?
Yeah.
So it's gotten to the point where it's vilification, it's ridicule, it's my way or the highway, it's bullying, it's shaming. I don't know what country this is. My wife's from the Soviet Union, and she says, this reminds me of where I grew up right now. Except over there, though, Sebastian, over there, you knew who to bribe. Here you don't.
Oh, my gosh. Great line. The book is COVID, The Politics of Fear and the Power of Science. Follow this man right now. He's a truth teller, Dr. Mark with the C, Mark Siegel on Twitter. Tell us what we do or do not know about Omicron, not Omnicron, as the president and Fauci called it today. My initial research is, yes, it's a new variant. It should have been called the She variant if we follow the Greek alphabet. It is perhaps more transmissible, but at the current time seems to be less deadly. What can we know at this point, and how should it change the way we live our lives, Dr. Siegel?
Sebastian, if you had a sense of humor, can you imagine? I mean, you do, but can you imagine calling it the She variant? I mean, what kind of justice would that be? I mean,
yes.
That would be tremendous, wouldn't it?
But
in all seriousness, viruses are trying to survive. They're like anything else, and I'm in the group that considers viruses alive. And so they're trying to survive, and the way they survive is by spreading easily. And South Africa has actually done a terrific job here and doesn't deserve to be ridiculed, marginalized, banned, all this stuff. They found this. I don't think it originated there, but they found it, and they've told the world about it. Not the WHO, mind you, who sits there waiting until they have to call a press conference because they're forced to. South Africa actually found this in the water. They found it in sewage. There's signs that it may be very contagious. But you know what? There's also signs that it may be milder than the previous variant, the Delta variant. You know why that's good? That's what happens historically in pandemics. That's what happened in 1918. Because viruses actually want to be your friend. They don't want to kill you. They want to spread from you to someone else.
Yeah, there's no point being a virus if everybody you infect dies, because then you can't spread, correct?
And viruses know that. I'm not saying that they're conscious. Viruses may be smarter than some people, but they're not conscious. And so, yes, the milder the better in terms of viruses doing what they want to do, which is be a parasite and spread from person to person. So I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being milder than Delta. If it is, it ends up being very good news. I also think that the vaccines will cover this. There'll be a hiccup. They may not cover it to the same extent, but they will cover it, and that's being tested right now, and I expect that
we're almost out of time. I've been wanting to ask this question to you for several months. Your reaction to the idea that children, infants, should be vaccinated if they're otherwise healthy, what is your take?
Well, believe it or not, I don't know about infants. We're not there yet. But I'm okay with children getting the shot because they're using a much lower dose. I think it decreases spread, which is what I want, because the spread is the problem here. And so far, it's been very good with that. I'm not against that at all. What I'm against is forcing mandates on children. That's something I'm against all across the board.
Excellent. All right, stay on the line. I have a question I'd like to ask you, but in the meantime, please follow this man at Dr. Mark Siegel on Twitter. That's Mark with a C. The book is COVID, The Politics of Fear and the Power of Science. Get it today. This is America First. We are live streaming. Don't forget, we're not just across the nation on more than 300 stations from Los Angeles to New York. We are also video streaming as well. The video stream is at rumble.com/SebGorka. That's rumble.com/SebGorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Our phone number, taking your calls on 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752. Stay here on the Salem Radio Network.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
And the misdirection play by Matt Gaetz, I think, blew up on this show tonight. I think Bob Kent is credible, and I don't see anything in his suggestions to the father that would qualify under any legal reckoning of extortion.
Listen, yes, I with that story, I like to proceed with caution. I believe in innocent until proven guilty. We've 100%. Already established that.
Well, so but they're two different things.
So I don't know.
The investigation of what Gates did, you got to wait for the facts.
Right.
We don't know them.
The whole thing
but the
about
extortion thing?
Extortion, yes.
One might be fact. This extortion thing, Fugazi.
You mean Fugazi, some kind of Italian you are? Oh, my gosh, Fredo. Well, we have the facts. Nobody in the mainstream legacy lying media is reporting about it, but I have it here. Breitbart.com, Paul Bois, Florida businessman Stephen Alford, pleaded guilty in federal court to attempting to extort $25 million from Congressman Matt Gaetz' family in exchange for making as of yet unproven allegations of sexual impropriety against the congressman disappear. Quote, Alford, who had entered a not guilty plea on October 1st, changed that plea at 2 p.m. Monday in Pensacola before the magistrate to guilty. Guilty of wire fraud on three counts. So, Matt Gaetz was right, and we are delighted. He's in the midst of celebrating, of being vindicated. Of course, we knew it all along, and he's with us right now. Congressman Matt Gaetz, why isn't the mainstream media reporting on this story? Matt, are you there?
Yes, Dr. Gorka. Thanks so much for having me. I have not seen as much coverage of the guilty plea of my extortionists as I saw of the false, now debunked allegations that, you know, were really, I think, inflamed rumors. And so now I'm just hopeful to continue my work in the Congress. I will say, Dr. Gorka, this guy who pled guilty wasn't working alone. Someone else, Bob Kent, went on television, went on Chris Cuomo's show and pitched this $25 million scheme as a legitimate endeavor. Well, now you have Stephen Alford, who is Kent's partner in the endeavor, pleading guilty to it. But then you wonder, well, why isn't there a cooperation agreement? Why isn't Alford forced to flip on Kent and to flip on the former DOJ official who was scheduled to take the wire the very day after the New York Times released these anonymous allegations against me? And the concern I have is that the person with contacts to the DOJ, the person with contacts to the intelligence community who were involved in this scheme don't seem to be a part of the accountability to date, and there seems to be no requirement that Alford flip on them. That concerns me. That really does concern me. The other thing, if you really compare the indictment of Alford to the guilty plea, he crashed his phone. Remember when the Mueller team went and all crashed
yes.
their phones so that we couldn't see what was going on? So Alford crashes his phone. He's initially, by the FBI agents here in North Florida, charged with the destruction of that evidence. And that charge just goes away, totally goes away. And so now we're unable to track the people Alford was talking to who set up this scheme. And you know, that really goes to the core of this entire scandal. It's a scandal for those who were trying to use false allegations to try to get my family to pay money in some crime.
So here's my question for you. Look, you're vindicated. This guy should, you know, rot in hell for what he did to you and your family. And you've got work to do. I mean, clearly this was an attempt to stop you fighting for your constituents and for the Republic on Capitol Hill because you are dangerous to the swamp. And you need to get back to doing that. And we're going to talk about some of the things that you're doing right now. But when are we going to get the full scoop here? Because, you know, the swamp isn't going to tell us the truth about the accomplices, the connections to the IC. Do you have a plan? Are there any investigative journalists out there who you think you can trust to tell us the true story about the people who tried to take you down, Matt?
Well, certainly I would give kudos to Emily Brooks at the Washington Examiner. She originally published the story of the extortion when other outlets turned it down. And now her reporting has also been vindicated by this guilty plea. There are tapes of Stephen Alford implicating a lot of very, you know, very powerful people. And those tapes need to be made public because they will allow us to source this scheme back to its corrupt origin. And I am going to be, you know, pursuing all my legal options to try to get those tapes into the public square. I've called for the FBI and the Department of Justice to release them. Now that Alford has pleaded guilty, there's no basis, no reason for them to not release these tapes, unless, of course, they're pursuing my other extortionists. And so that's what I really want them to do. We'll see if they pursue my extortionists with the same vigor that they've pursued parents who show up to school board meetings who don't want their children taught critical race theory.
Yeah, well, he is the author of the book Firebrand, the podcast Firebrand. You can follow him at Rep. Matt Gaetz. He's on his way back to the swamp. We're going to get him in studio. I think we've got to do it as we did last time with MTG. What a riotous hour that was with you and Marjorie Taylor Greene in studio. Look, it was clear to me at the onset, knowing you, having broken bread with you, had you on the show numerous times, that you had to be attacked. You had to be taken out like my old boss, President Trump, because you're effective and because you're on Capitol Hill fighting the swamp. Is this the...
Well, by the way, they did the same to you, Dr. Gore.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when President Trump wanted you there at the most high-impact moments of his presidency, defining America's role in the world, there were a lot of people in the national security apparatus who were very threatened by the ideas that they had seen you already present to the country. And so to push back against those ideas, they used every tool in the toolbook, including dragging their feet on your national security clearance so that you could be right there driving that America First value set that you and President Trump shared. So, you know, it's sort of different tools that the establishment uses to try to deplatform, destroy, compromise people. Frequently, it's done through campaign donations. And I don't take campaign donations right from lobbyists or political action committees. And so, you know, I do think that there across the political spectrum was an effort to try to destroy me. I want to thank the folks at Project Veritas for getting the undercover footage of CNN saying essentially they knew this was propaganda, but they just kept repeating it because I'm effective at blocking the agenda. So let it be a lesson to the entire...
So this is my question to you. What is the lesson learned that you want to send to all those freshman congressmen and women or all those people in the media spotlight? This is a mark of being effective, is it not?
Yeah, I tell folks like, you know, Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Madison Cawthorn, you know, folks who I think are really untethered from the corrupt influences of this place, that, you know, there's two kind of fighters in this town, those who've had a scandal and those who will have a scandal because they gin up nonsense. I mean, that I saw that with Cawthorn. You see that with Boebert, where they really try to focus you on everything other than the task at hand. And one thing that President Trump taught us, you can't let the process be the punishment. You have to remain focused and driven for the mission for the people.
And never, ever apologize for anything. Fight, fight, fight. That's this man's reputation, and that's why he's a good friend of the show. Follow him, Rep. Matt Gaetz. Read his book, listen to his podcast. They're both called Firebrand. Tell us about your latest plan. Super excited. You know I'm a gun guy, Second Amendment guy. What is the lesson from Kenosha, and what are you suggesting on Capitol Hill?
Well, I'm going to be introducing a national stand your ground law. I believe in no state, in no municipality, in no jurisdiction of our great land should someone have the legal duty to retreat. That is what most Americans believe. That's what the jury system reflects. But in some states and in some jurisdictions, there's literally a duty on someone outside of their own home to take that beating, to turn their back and run. In Florida, we, I think, pioneered the Castle Doctrine and the Stand Your Ground laws that gave people strong self-defense rights. And I think that this Rittenhouse verdict really shows where the country is, and we should have a national law to reflect that American principle of self-defense. You know, Dr. Gorka, in the Soviet Union, one of the first things the communists did was erode the right of self-defense.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that happen here.
Not only the Soviet Union, whether it's Hitler's Germany, whether it was Venezuela eight years ago, it's the first thing they do. It's how they turn citizens into subjects, and how a free population simply becomes a population that cannot defend itself or remove a usurpacious or dictatorial regime. What's your last message to all of those out there? You're seeing the mama bears rise up at the school board meetings. What's your message to those who haven't been attacked like you have, but who feel intimidated, Congressman?
Well, we cannot fly our American flag at half mast. We have to embrace this movement with full-throated advocacy, with our time, with our treasure. And the good news is we've got the wind at our back. Polling I was reviewing this morning showing that more Americans are turning to the Republican brand and more Republicans believe that Donald Trump is the best candidate to win in 2024. That's what I believe. Now we just got to go get it done.
And they're doing it because of people like you. God bless you. He was vindicated. We knew it. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. You can now watch America First on TV, and I urge you to check us out. Go to salemnews.com or download the app today. You can also watch us on Roku and Fire Stick. That's Salem News Channel, the antidote to the lying legacy media.
Here we go. Man title. Well, I'm not going to read it all. You just sign it.
Does he even know the microphone is on? He's there sitting, surrounded by cabinet members and guests, supposed to sign an executive order. He starts reading and says, oh, I'm not even going to read it. I'm just going to sign it. That was, of course, the man who sadly bears the title President of the United States. But is it worse to have somebody who's just not compos mentis as opposed to somebody who's just, I don't know, really fascistic? This is the Prime Minister of New Zealand who's celebrating the fact that you can now go to the toilet. Cut seven.
And importantly, because I know this is a question many Aucklanders have, you can now see family and friends again in their homes and use the bathroom inside. Luxury.
You can use the bathroom on inside. Let us try and get to the bottom of the insanity, which is worse, with one of our regular guests. He's, of course, the author of numerous works, most recently Donald J. Trump, a president like no other, regular contributor to the Epoch Times and American Greatness, Lord Conrad Black. Welcome back to America First.
Thank you, Sebastian. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Lord Back, you've written this piece entitled The Twin Pillars of Biden's Failure, and it concentrates on the disaster regarding immigration and then the environment and fossil fuels. But before we get to that, can I just wind the clock back a little bit to a discussion we had back in January that I think most people missed here in America? Of course, people who had jobs that were in the energy sector didn't understand the decision on day one by Biden to renege on the XL pipeline, the Keystone extension. But this isn't just an issue for Americans and people in the energy industry. Can you remind us what the reaction was on both sides of the aisle in Canada to that decision out of the new administration?
Now, are we talking about the wall?
No. The Keystone XL pipeline. When that was axed on day one, there was quite a reaction on both sides of the aisle in Canada, was there not?
There was. The whole country was of the view that it was a breach of faith. I mean, we dutifully built part of it, and now we built a pipeline to nowhere. I mean, you know, we don't need a pipeline to go from Calgary to the Canadian border with the North Dakota there, is it? In Montana, I guess it would be. The environmental group, which includes the government of Canada. I mean, Justin Trudeau is one of these people who's terribly concerned about carbon emissions. But, you know, we had an assurance that it was absolutely safe environmentally, built to the highest standards, delayed for years by Obama. Then we got it all agreed with President Trump, and all parties in this country were in favor of it. It was really going to be a breath of fresh air for the oil-producing region of the country, under the best of circumstances, exporting oil to our closest ally, not only geographically, but in all other respects, in an absolutely safe manner. And then abruptly, without a word of consultation, in the first hours of his presidency, Biden, who most Canadians wished well, I always wish an incoming American president well, slapped us in the face, and it was very offensive. And, you know, a lot of people saying, well, you know, we can retaliate in the export area with the United States. They send us plenty of things. And I mean, no one wants an argument with the U.S., but, you know, in the long relationship between the two countries, not a serious difference between them in over 200 years, you know, this was just a shocking development. It's just not how good friends amongst states behave to each other.
In your piece, you focus on the explosion of gas prices up to $5 a gallon and the consequences of having 200,000 illegal immigrants cross the border every single month in America. And then you have this line. You say, as practically everyone outside his immediate entourage saw and predicted, these were disastrous errors for Biden. Are we sure that these are errors, or are these the logical consequences of the Democrat Party having become radicalized when it comes to the question of fossil fuels and the environment and illegal immigration and buying new constituents?
Well, I think they're both, you say. I mean, I think the impetus to take those two steps in the first hours of the administration came from precisely the source that you described, the radical left faction of the Democrats, which appears to have been essentially handed the task of policy formulation in this first period of the administration, and there's no doubt that they certainly purported to believe that reducing access to oil, along with reducing exploration for oil and fracking, would be environmentally sound, and they were quite prepared to ignore the consequences on energy self-sufficiency, which had just been achieved, and the consequent rise in energy prices, because they presumed, I guess, that rising energy prices would facilitate their subsidization of sustainable energy, you know, windmills and solar panels and so on, which, of course, is nonsense. They're horribly expensive and very inefficient, and you can't store that energy. So if the sun isn't out and the wind isn't blowing, you're back to what you've been using before and doing it with imported oil, some of it from countries that are not friendly to the United States. And this terrible indignity of the administration going and asking for concessions from OPEC and the Russians, but not from Canada, you know, who would be happy to make them the concessions and with whom they had an arrangement for a pipeline. And on the border, I look, it's not for me to mind read the collective wisdom of the Democratic Party, but the appearance certainly is that they thought, as I wrote and as others have said, that if you just let enough of these people in, you continued the abandonment of the constitutional requirement of being a citizen to vote, then they would faithfully vote for the Democrats as a reward for having allowed them into the country, and would contribute to the likely future electoral prospects of the Democrats. So I assume that there was a partisan as well as a far-left ideological motive involved, but my statement that they were disastrous errors is based on, one, the simple fact in each case that abandoning energy self-sufficiency is a serious strategic mistake. Two, letting unlimited, undocumented people into the country, unlimited in number, is a serious strategic mistake. And in both cases, they're going to contribute to a political disaster. I mean, they may be able to hold the line for 3 years as long as the administration, but the country will punish them severely at the first opportunities that it has.
If you look at recent polling, more than half of Americans consider the poor state of things in America as directly a result of Biden. There's a majority that doesn't wish to see him run in 3 years' time. Given that you've written seminal works on prior presidents, not just President Trump, but Nixon and FDR, what do you expect? Is there any way for them to backtrack, or are they ideologically painted into a corner? Can they incrementally diverge from what they've committed themselves to, or is this now politically impossible?
No, you can change course. You can change course. Mr. Nixon changed course in 1971 when he abandoned gold and had his price stabilization board and so forth, and purported to freeze wages and prices within certain parameters. I mean, he'd said he wouldn't do it. He said conditions have changed and we're going to do it. And yeah, but there are lots of other examples of that kind of thing. And you can do it. You say, look, we did it for certain reasons. Conditions have changed, and so we're adapting to that. And maybe modestly embarrassing, but they've got such a flacking and cheering section in the political media of the country. They could do almost anything and have it sold by their media allies as a dynamic and courageous executive decision. So you can do it, but in order to do it, since obviously the ideological element is to stick with it, the only thing that is likely to override that is the recognition that if they do stick with it, they're all going to be out of office. They'll be handed a massive bus ticket in the interims, the midterms next year, and whoever they put up as a candidate 3 years from now is going to have to carry the can for this administration, whether they were prominent in it or not, and they'll pay for it.
And it is truly fascinating, I think, that despite being asked more than once, the current Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, has refused to confirm whether or not she will be running next year. Add to that the reports that she has just bought a $24 million house in the state run by Ron DeSantis in Florida, on the beach, despite the cries of global warming and raising sea levels, is perhaps indication that even Pelosi knows how great the trouble is. She is the co-host, along with Victor Davis Hanson and Bill Bennett, of the podcast Scholars and Sense, author of numerous works that you should check out right now, including A Matter of Principle and A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump and the Restoring of America. And you can follow him at Conrad M. Black on Twitter. We will be back with Lord Black after these messages.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Job Creators Network.
Do you have a bucket list? I have a very sure one. One of the things left is I want to learn how to play a mouth organ. Seriously, that's one, because it's an instrument you can take anywhere. What about travel? Are there any places you'd still like to go if you've never been to the Middle East, if you haven't been to Israel and the Holy Land? Well, guess what? Now is your opportunity. Because of COVID, because of the Wu flu, we had to cancel our Stand with Israel trip this year, but it's okay. We have our new dates. Next November to December, 10 days in the Holy Land with me and my Salem colleague Dinesh D'Souza, the trip of a lifetime where you can walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. We will visit all the key sites, the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, the Temple Mount, Jerusalem, the Wailing Wall. Reserve your seats today. Call 855-565-5519 for a trip of a lifetime. Even if you've been to Israel, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. That number again, 855-565-5519, or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. That's standwithisraeltour.com. We are back with none other than Lord Conrad Black. He is the author most recently. Follow him at Epoch Times and American Greatness and Greatness.com. His latest piece is The Twin Pillars of Biden's Failure. Lord Black, there's one line in here where you talk about the calumny, the libel that President Trump had to go through, years of being labeled an individual with, not quote, Nazi attitudes and sympathies. I haven't told you that I was going to ask this question, but it came to me as I was reading your autobiographies, especially the Matter of Principle and Backward Glances. Libel laws in America. You are very familiar with Canada, the UK, and America. Don't you think we have a problem here, given how difficult it is? As a public figure like myself, if somebody libels me, I have to prove at the time of libel that they meant malice on me. Isn't that absurd?
It is. It's the New York Times and Sullivan rule.
Yes.
And it is just bad law. I mean, it is practically impossible to prove an intent to defame. And if that's what you have to do, which, as you say, is the case for any public figure, which is almost anyone who's ever had any publicity, it wouldn't apply to someone, I guess, like that lad from Kentucky, the Covington,
Nicholas Sandman, yes.
Yeah, and it may not apply to young Kyle
Rittenhouse.
But to people like us who've kicked around and been, you know, publicized so much, it does apply, and it makes it practically impossible to do anything. They can write anything, say anything, and in order to get at them, we have to prove that they intended, as you say, they maliciously intended to defame, and then in order to get any kind of an award, we also have to prove damages. And that in practice is almost an impossible hurdle to surmount. And it's absurd. I mean, I think the United States should be like other civilized countries, like Britain and Canada and France and Germany, where you assess the evidence, and if it appears highly likely that the party objected to, the respondent party, the defendant, either knew that what they were doing was defamatory or were negligent for not knowing, then you have to find against them. But that's not how it works.
In the meantime, what is there left? I mean, as a media mogul yourself in the past with Hollinger International, as a publisher of amazing names such as the Daily Telegraph, the Jerusalem Post, amongst others, there are these, I think the UK has this press standards authority. Is there any expectation that the media will police itself in America?
No, none whatsoever. And in fairness, I just don't think we can expect that. And I don't think the Press Complaints Council, I believe that's what it's called, yes, in Britain, accomplishes much. I mean, I think they're well-meaning people, but I don't think they accomplish much. But what you do get in Britain is when there's a real libel, you get a serious lawsuit and you get serious awards. Now, Mrs. Trump, for example, Melania Trump, collected, I believe, £2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, what, almost $3 million. From the Daily Mail, when they implied that she had been an unvirtuous woman as a paying occupation at one time, which was a completely outrageous thing that they could not substantiate for a second, and so without going to trial, because they knew it would get very rough, they apologized very profusely and made a large payment over to her, and I don't doubt that Press Complaints Commission wrapped their knuckles too, but it's really the embarrassment and the money loss that hurts, and it does have an effect. Now, the ultimate way of dealing with this is a better educated population that requires a more responsible media, and there we have to thank the teachers' unions,
yeah,
for turning our state school systems in all these Western countries basically into daycare centers. I mean, the supreme irony to me of modern political society and in the democratic world is we have paid more and more and more for education to get less and less intelligent graduates.
Yeah. And in the meantime, do you think the only possible route here in the United States would be some challenge to Sullivan versus New York in the Supreme Court?
Yes. And I, again, I don't want to get out of my depth here, but Given the amount and gravity of abuse of that practically blank check to defame people, yeah, almost complete toleration of defamation on grounds of it's all part of freedom of expression, given that, I suspect the court would say, you know, we really have to modify this. I mean, look, you don't want to muzzle the press. You don't want the press to be intimidated from legitimate investigation or legitimate criticism. We're not talking about that. Neither you are nor I. And but the idea that it could just, I mean, I don't mind the National Enquirer, but that story they did years ago about Carol Burnett's biological father being a creature from outer space. I mean, it's hilarious in a way, but it's nonsense. And they just got to be more responsible.
Yeah. In the meantime, I think the pugilistic style of individuals like Donald Trump on Twitter is to be expected, is it not?
Yeah, that's the only you asked about my experience. The way I dealt with defamation was I had plenty of access to the media to reply to the people defaming me. And frankly, my talents at slinging invective around are not bad, you know. And for the most part, people don't attack me anymore.
Well, find out for yourself how talented he is with the English language. Truly marvelous, not only raconteur, but writer. The ones that I recommend first off are A Matter of Principle, and then, of course, any of his presidential histories. You can start with the most relevant one, because I do believe after next year, it's going to be more relevant than ever. It is A President Like No Other, Donald J. Trump and the Restoring of America. We have been talking to our regular guest, Lord Conrad Black, co-host along with Victor Davis Hanson and Bill Bennett of the podcast Scholars and Sense. And you can follow him at Conrad M. Black. Your call's next here on America First, 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752. We are broadcasting live from the ReliefFactor.com studios and also live streaming on the YouTube alternative Rumble. Subscribe today. It's free. Rumble.com/SebGORKA. That's SebGorka.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.